You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan, and it is awesome to be with you today. I am going to pull you into a conversation I'm having with Michael Morehouse. Michael is the president of Mosquito Shield. This is a company that you might not know of, but they do a lot of things with pest control. We're going to be talking about seasonal businesses, but we're actually going to take a really exciting detour that I didn't see coming. And we're going to be talking about several things that he's learned as a part of building out leadership structures with seasonal businesses. And specifically, there's an idea that he's going to talk about later on. It's going to be called Get It, Want It, Capacity to Do It. You're going to want to listen to this because there's a lot of things that if you're a leadership, if you're a manager, if you have any employees at all, you could probably take away today and put into place. Let's introduce you to Michael. All right, Michael, I am so looking forward to having our conversation today because you've been on the books for a minute. Glad we're able to finally get you like face to face, or I guess as face to face as we can get in this sort of format. But for those who don't yet know who you are or what you do, can we start there for a second? Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Ryan. I am Michael Morehouse. I'm the brand president here at Mosquito Shield franchise.
So for those who don't know, do you mind sharing a little bit more about Mosquito Shield? Like, is it traditional pest control? Is it only do like perimeter stuff for mosquitoes? Like, share a little bit more about the business just for people who maybe are not familiar with the franchise.
Yeah, really happy to. So we sort of, pioneered this industry 22 years ago now, which is kind of hard to believe because mosquito control is still relatively new to so many people and that we've been toiling in it for 20 plus years. Started out primarily mosquito focused, all of our R&D. We developed our own product. A lot of the, time and energy went into just really understanding mosquitoes. That quickly blended into controlling ticks as well. So really successful at a tick program that we have. And then just recently, really in the past 12 months, we launched an additional vertical in perimeter pest control. So primarily like spiders and ants, the creepy crawly things nobody wants around their home.
Yeah, I do not want those in my home either. So how did you get into this space? Did you grow up in this industry? Is this new for you? Like, how did you find yourself doing this?
No, great question. For me personally, I was hired back in 2008, to come in and build a sales program for a local franchisee here in Massachusetts that had a lawn care franchise. So he had a lawn care franchise, and at the same time, he had been building and kind of trying to grow this mosquito business. And that partnership with him went really well. We during the 2008-2009 struggles, his lawn care business, was challenged, and that's why he brought me in. But during that time, we saw a really interesting phenomenon, which the mosquito business really was recession resistant. It was growing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, double and triple digit growth. If you think back or you think through even the pandemic, people tend to stay home during those times, right? When things are a little tighter, they're traveling a little less, but they still want to enjoy their backyard. They want to be out there comfortably. So we become very much a need-based business with mosquito control versus a nice green lawn that you could potentially put off having. Mosquito control has always done really well during those times. So it was around 2011 at that point. I was still with the lawn care company. He asked me to start spending and learning a little bit more about the mosquito business. Thought there was a chance to maybe grow it nationally. It made sense franchising since he had been in a franchise for years. I sat with him and said, listen, tell me everything you like about being in a franchise, everything you don't like about it. We created a list. And Ryan, we really tried to build Mosquito Shield around as many of the likes, leaving out as many of the dislikes. And I think, 11 plus years later, when you look at our franchise agreement, you speak to our franchisees, it's probably as franchisee friendly as a system as you can be in because of the roots of it. So I launched it in 2013 and I went around to every one of the local business opportunity and franchise expos around the country and set up a booth and just started sort of pitching our wares and you know, preaching about all the things that I thought were really amazing about our brand and about the space, the industry. And then, you know, 11 years later, we're in 360 plus territories around the country.
Good for you. That's awesome. So going into this, it's interesting because both of those industries, like obviously lawn and any sort of pest by and large, they're very seasonal. And I don't think unless people know those industries well, they might not think about it, right? Similar to HVAC or something like that, where it's like, hey, in the summer, you're really busy, but things might slow down a bit in December, January, February. For your personal experience, like getting into that space, what was it like kind of experiencing that firsthand of like the seasonality sort of nature of both lawn, but also getting into like the mosquito world?
Yeah, you know, it's a different, you're busy. It's just a different pace and it's a different busy, right? So you'll close, you know, we have some locations in the deep South down in Florida that they're, you know, certainly closer to a 12-month business, but the majority of our locations around the country are 5 to 7 months that they're open, you know, but, we, you know, there's a lot of really important tactics that you're doing in the off season. I think what comes to mind for a lot of people thinking about getting into this is what does cash flow look like?
Yeah.
And, you know, what does hiring and retaining look like when it's seasonal? So we've had to build a lot of infrastructure around both of those things. From a cash flow standpoint, Ryan, we do really well with what we call prepay programs. So as our season is still active at the end of the September, October timeframe, and we're still on properties, we send a message out to our entire customer base that says, you know, as a loyal customer, nobody will ever pay less than you. Prepay now for next year and save X amount of dollars. And we get 30 to 40% of our entire customer base paying us now for next year.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when you look at cash flow, you know, not that you can go out and spend all that money because you haven't performed those services yet, but it does give you some breathing room. So as you're, you know, turning off the lights and winterizing your van, you've got tens of thousands of dollars coming in for next year. So it's first and foremost rewarding your loyal customers, right?
That's the upside for them. Sure.
Yeah. That's the payoff for them and they deserve it. It's giving you some much needed cash flow. It's also taking them off the market, right? And knowing that you're going to be in those neighborhoods. So it allows you to start preparing in that off season for what your marketing tactics are going to look like for the next year, the areas you're going to focus on. So those are some really positive benefits that you know, I think are initially considered a concern for people looking at seasonal businesses.
Yeah. And I think I'm curious what your experience is with this too, because I feel like a lot of people in really seasonal businesses, when it's busy season, right? So it's middle summer, depending on their lane, right? Whatever their busy season is, when cash is coming in, they see it coming in hand over fist. And sometimes they make really short-sighted decisions with how to manage those funds. Sometimes they think it's a good idea, but it's actually dumb. And sometimes it's just a dumb idea, like they got to go out and buy a new boat all of a sudden. Do you feel like helping the franchisees learn how to manage the cash on hand during busy season is just as important as it is during the shoulder and off seasons?
It's probably more important because in the off seasons or the shoulder, you know, especially when they're starting out and they, you know, they've got 100 customers, 30 of them prepaying for next year isn't going to really make or break their off season. Sure, yeah. In a lot of instances, they don't have any money to spend poorly, right? So it's really important during the peak period of, you know, May, June, July, when all of that money is coming in to make sure that they're thinking about that. That's their 12-month revenue. You know, that is where I think as a franchise system and our responsibility or obligation as the franchisor is to teach them and coach them continuously on sort of that fiscal responsibility, you know, how to manage that money because, you know, I call it a blessing and a curse. The curse is the first 2 years of a seasonal business because you're closed for half of it.
Yeah.
The blessing is, you know, 5, 6, 8 years later, you're making 12 months revenue in 6 months time. But in the first couple of years, you got to learn how to take that money that's coming in 8 to 10 weeks and plan to spread that out over the course of the entire year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen firsthand people struggle with that. Is there like a certain, like, do you even have like a cash on hand amount? Like, hey, you need 6 months of burn or 4 months of burn? Like, is there a target number you try to advise and coach people to keep on hand?
Even for
like emergency and uncertainty sort of things?
We do. You know what? We actually kind of take a little bit of a different approach to that, in that we look at that as their capital needed up front when they come into the business. So any revenue they generate is above and beyond that. So from an investment standpoint, we really want to make sure we check the boxes of low cost investment, because it's not brick and mortar. You can operate this out of your driveway to start. So your investment's really low. But we also have a probably a higher net worth and capital requirement than a lot of home service, home-based businesses do, because we just want to make sure they've got the staying power for the first 2 years. So right. They're not dependent on every customer, every sale, and the burden and management of that is a little less intensive, because we make sure they've got enough capital right out of the gate.
The 2 years, that seems like I've heard that in like a restaurant franchises too. Is that where that standard came from, or how did you come up with that 2 year number?
Well, let me break that down a little bit, because for me, you know, if you're in the Midwest, say you're opening up in Minnesota and the mosquito control is so, you know, so needed there, their season is so short, it's a 5 month season. You sign your franchise agreement today, right? So December, you're a brand new Mosquito Shield franchisee. You don't open until May of 2024. So you've generated zero revenue between now and May of 2024. You close at the end of September of 2024. So 5 months and you're dark. Then you're dark all the way until that following May again. And then by September of 2025, so a year and a half after you've signed your franchise agreement, you've only been open for 10 months.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge.
Crazy when you think about it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've only been open for 10 months. You've been an owner for a year and a half.
So that's interesting. So does that mean that you sign up franchisees contra-cyclical? Like, do they sign up more during shoulder than they would during peak season?
You know, it's kind of, I've said this from day one. I just recently made the connection to the saying, you know, the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago. The second best is now. So when people ask, what's the best time to get into this? It's really when its timing is right for you.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is a great time. Somebody signs on right now. There's a nice, pace to getting open in March, April, May, depending on their, you know, where they're located in the country. So what I have found over the years managing the development is that a lot of people hesitate in the summertime. They feel like they already missed the year, and they kind of go cold from an interest standpoint in opening a mosquito business when they learn about it in July or August. So we always have a little lull during the summer because people are hesitant to buy a business that they really don't think they can get active and going until the following year.
Yeah, because they feel like that train's already left the station. They've got to wait till the next season. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's really fascinating, because I feel like, I think this is true probably for a lot of companies in general, but I think especially true for the trades, is when people are starting a new business, franchise or not, a lot of them tend to undercapitalize, just not understanding or not planning about the resource requirements involved with everything about starting, establishing, penetrating a market, getting SOPs, getting software, like all those costs of just existing. It's interesting how you actually think through what other, you also mentioned like things with hiring, retention, during shoulder. What are some, do you mind talking about some of those tactics that you help coach your franchisees through during that period of time too?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways we kind of empower our franchisees to look at this. I've said for years to interview year round and hire when you find the right people. People are always going to be your limit to your success. So building a really great team around and under you is going to be how you scale any business. So you should always be looking and thinking about that. So I give examples. If you're in Best Buy on the weekend and there's a great guy or gal helping you out, picking out a TV, great personality, great demeanor, that's a hire, right? They're in retail, yeah. They're working lousy hours and probably making lousy money, right? So that's a hire. a hostess or a host at a restaurant, right? A greeter. Like those are people that, again, terrible hours, tough pay. So those are people
tough
that you should always
tell sometimes. Yeah. Like Tommy Miller. Yeah. Tommy Miller, A1 Garage. He's kind of got that same philosophy. Someone who does great service at a restaurant, someone who does out of the way in what you'd expect them to be frustrated or disappointed or stressed.
Yeah. They can shine in that environment. Yeah. Think about if you empowered them. Yeah. If you empowered them and gave them some opportunity and responsibility they never had before, think about what an incredible asset and what you would be doing for them as an individual. That's to me is hiring people is so empowering. And I try to make sure my franchisees know that, like they're in charge. You have employed somebody. Like somebody is gainfully employed because of you. You have the right to hold them accountable, to, you know, set boundaries, but give them the opportunity to flourish within that. And that's just so powerful. So interview year round, hire when you find the right people. The other thing is in home services, you tend to pull from like industries. So they're used to the seasonality. The benefit with our business is the margins are so great. We can typically pay a mosquito technician 30 to 40% more than they'd make, for example, say in a lawn care business or a landscape business. And excuse me. And it's a much better quality of life. It's Monday through Friday. There's no weekends. Typically in seasonal businesses, they're going 7 days a week because they got to make hay while they can.
Sure.
We stay off properties on the weekend. That is when a homeowner is enjoying what they are paying us for. So the last thing we want to do is show up at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning, fire up a 5-horsepower, you know, blower and start spraying somebody's yard. So Mondays through Fridays, they're typically home early afternoon. They don't work when it rains. I mean, it's a pretty good quality of life. And they usually have a winter job of some sort lined up. You know, in the shorter seasons, colder climates, they snow plow, they interior paint, you know, they tend to do that. We've added a really great bolt-on holiday lighting business. So franchisees can add that if they choose. That's another way to retain technicians even longer. So they spray for mosquitoes all summer. They wrap that up and they go right to hanging holiday lights, and that takes them right through the winter. They might have a month or two off and then they're back at it again. So a lot of great, we offer benefits to our technicians. So they'll pay for their benefits during the 24 weeks they're working. So to keep it, they've got to stay employed with you. So it's stickiness. So it didn't come easy. These are things that we learned the hard way. You know, being in mosquito control for 20 plus years, franchising now going into 11 years, we have been blessed to develop a lot of great best practices. I mean, we honestly, Ryan, have franchisees 10 years in the system that still have their very first technician
That's insane.
Seasonal climate. Yeah.
That's insane. So I'm curious too. Okay. So the always be hiring, I know that's a best practice I hear a lot from different groups and coaches and makes tons of sense in the world. And you should be comfortable like letting go in that sort of framework, letting go your underperformers, the people who are always like pulling you back, and hire people who are better. 1,000 reasons why all that makes sense. One of one of the things that I feel like is a limiting factor in a lot of that is that for a lot of trades, the people who manage or own came out of the trade. They have very little management experience, very little leadership experience. And so I see these men and women who are good, hardworking men and women in management or leadership roles getting frustrated with dealing with employees because they don't know how to manage employees. They don't know how to have a process manual. They don't know how to hold people accountable. They don't know how to do regular meeting cadence. They don't know how to set standards of like, hey, if you don't do this, like you don't have a job here anymore. And from a management standpoint, it seems like that lack of resource, that lack of training is something that I see just across the board in a lot of industries. For you, one, is that something that you would agree with, that you have identified within your franchise system? And two, if so, what things have you done to help resource not just the hiring pool that's always existing, but the management and leadership of those people who are always hired, so that they can become 10-year employees?
You know, you're so spot on. And what's sort of counterintuitive to all of this is the franchisees coming in are buying a franchise because they don't have those skill sets. So for a franchisor to just assume that they know how to manage, they know how to hire, they know how to train, for a franchisor to assume that an owner knows how to sell, that they've got skill sets, you know, that you would just assume that they're really good at selling, they're really good at mentoring. Like, that's not the case almost ever, right? Or they might have one those skill sets, but not all of them. So I think the more resources you have in place, the more infrastructure that's there to help with that. That was an eye-opener for us in the beginning on the sales side. We weren't really in tune to the fact that our franchisees were terrible on the phone. Quite frankly, they were just not good.
They're usually the worst people that you want on the phone.
Super friendly. Totally. But we started year after year after year. We started driving more and more leads nationally, but we weren't growing proportionally in sales. And I literally started listening to phone calls. I've been in sales my whole life. And I said, oh, God, we've got to get these guys off the phone.
Yeah.
They would talk to you about apple pie recipes and everything but mosquito control, and hang up and not know your name, not ask for the sale, not have a
call, never get in the CRM, nothing.
Nothing. Right. So I think the most recent realization, exactly what you just brought up, is the hiring and then ongoing training of technicians, because they're such a commodity and you've got to really make sure you're nurturing them. And some people just are not good at it. They don't have the experience in it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've done is we've helped with the hiring process first and foremost. So somebody that just doesn't have any experience in HR, we've actually internally here will do interviews alongside them. So we will get on the phone, get on a Zoom with a potential candidate. We know the questions to ask. We know if they come from a lawn care landscape background, we know if they're straight shooters or not, which our franchisees necessarily wouldn't know. So we're hoping that what that does initially right out of the gate is sort of filter out and bring in a better candidate from day one. So you're already a step ahead. And then from there, we've done a lot of mentoring programs that we've recently developed. And I said recently, probably in the last 18 months, we've developed some mentoring programs internally that the franchisees can leverage to, one, learn how to better manage themselves. But we've also worked with the people that they've identified as candidates to promote within their organization. Mm. And what does that look like? And then very recently, we've started operating under EOS as a brand.
EOS is such a great, great
brand. I love it. I love it. I got introduced about a year and a half ago. So when we got acquired by Five Star Franchising in March of 2022, they slowly rolled it out. So we have been operating fully under it now for about 14 months. And we've introduced it to our franchisees. And we operate with our franchisees in an open and honest format. And I think, you know, over time, we will slowly be incorporating it at the franchisee level. Because I just think it's so powerful. And it helps everybody in the categories that you mentioned, right? Yeah. All of those situations can be solved in an EOS term, can be solved. All those issues can be solved by following some structure like that.
So now that I know that you're EOS, does that mean, like, are you actually deploying some of these tools that EOS has to the franchisees without them even knowing? So, like, are you doing Delegate and Elevate? Are you doing the People Analyzer? Do they have access to some of these processes, but maybe absent the framework that EOS would provide?
It's exactly what we're doing. So, like, I had a meeting about 3 weeks ago with a franchisee who was having a situation with a really good employee, and I gave them the Delegate Elevate form and said, sit down with them, tell them to take it home, take a couple days with it, be really open and honest with themselves. So we're always weaving stuff in, right? Be open and honest with them, ask them to be open and honest with themselves, and tell them to take a couple of days and write what they really love and think they're really great at, you know, what they like, and you know, the whole Delegate Elevate. And that type of tool is fabulous. And it's so, there's so much self-awareness that comes out of that exercise for the individual.
Yeah.
So without the franchisee even knowing, they've already just empowered that employee. They've given them means to think differently about themselves and about how they engage in their job. And then it gives the franchisee insight to what that person really thinks their sweet spot is and how they can help that organization. Now, at the end of the day, that might determine that there's not a fit for them. Like, you know, right person, which wrong seat.
It's good to have that clarity. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's so much that yeah, it's amazing. So much great stuff that comes out of it.
Yeah. I think for me, when I first started learning about EOS, especially about like hiring and promoting other people and even like recruiting other people, which I think we've got more and more into doing, is the get it, want it capacity to do it. That sort of just really pithy way of saying, do they understand what you're asking them to do? And then do they want to do the thing that you're asking them to do? And then it's like, oh, cool. Do they have the skills to do that thing that you're asking them to do? Because I think a lot of people are like, I'm just going to hire my friend. I'm going to hire this other person because he needs a job. This other person gave me a sob story that I resonated with. But the get it, want it, capacity to do it, regardless of where one falls in the org chart, is really, really helpful from sorting out like good hires or good promotions and people that probably need to be promoted outside of the company into another opportunity of their choosing. At least for me, yeah, I found that crazy helpful.
We have built GWC, so gets it, wants it, capacity to do it. We've built or incorporated GWC into our annual review process.
That's awesome.
And encourage all of our franchisees to do that with their employees, because the only one that could be potentially a no is the G, right? Is the get it, because that could be on you. They might not just really get what their roles and responsibilities are, but if they don't want it and don't have the capacity, then is it the right person in the wrong seat, or are they just not a fit for the organization?
Right.
And it's as simple as that. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. So GWC is a really wonderful sort of measuring stick.
It really is. Yeah. So much of EOS is about creating clarity. It creates clarity. And I think, I don't know if you struggle with this. I feel like early on when I was learning about it, I felt like, well, there's not a lot here that's like super rocket science. You know, it's like a little bit of this idea, a little bit of that idea, and it's all kind of put together. But I feel like it's really good at discipline and like simplicity, like just do the things. And when you do the things, the problems identify themselves and you can solve them. It's a great
point. Oh, yeah. For me, yeah, sorry to cut you off. For me,
No, you're good.
I think I might have had the opposite reaction because it was so simple and so sensible to me. That it was, having been, you know, my professional career hiring and you know, firing hundreds and hundreds of people over the years, and these simple tools may have made such a difference in such a short amount of time. That's awesome, that it was just it was an aha moment for me.
That's awesome. If somebody's listening to this now, maybe they're a franchisee, maybe they're in your system, maybe they're another, maybe they just work as an independent company on their own. Knowing what you know now about building a business, scaling a business, learning to manage it throughout seasonality, what are two or three points of advice that you might offer to someone listening who goes, man, this Michael guy, he has stuff that I could learn from? Like, what are the top two or three things you'd say, this is stuff to start thinking about or implementing?
Yeah. So one, I mean, if it's in regards to like getting into sort of the home service space or seasonal business space, is, you know, I really encourage business ownership. So whether it's, I mean, even outside of our franchise system, I love talking to people who are entertaining the idea and encouraging them, you know, making sure they've done their homework, you know, asking some key questions to them. But I would say, you know, do your homework, but if you've had the itch to do it, then you're there. Like, take the leap of faith, because I feel like the risk is so minimal when you really think of what the reward can be. So if you're considering business ownership, obviously do your homework, but I would consider you to jump in and do it. There's never more of an ideal time than when it's ready for you. So that would be one thing. And then on the business management side of it, going back to the open and honest comment, I think that, you know, when you're hiring and working with people, the tendency is to be really, and I think it's justifiable, but you're nervous and tend to be walking on eggshells around people. And I mentioned it earlier in our conversation today, Ryan, that, you know, the ability to hire and employ somebody is super powerful and should be empowering to you as a business owner, and to embrace that, which then allows you to put structure in place, hold people accountable, that, you know, putting policies and procedures in place that leads to profitability and efficiency. So those are the things that you want to just, those can be coached up. You don't have to naturally be skilled at that.
I think, well said.
Reaching out, and those things can definitely be coached up.
There is a book, I don't know if you've read it, but about the idea of being open and honest specifically with your team as a leader towards your team, called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, Patrick Lencioni. It's totally worth the read. There's like two books. There's one called The Advantage, and there's one called Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It's the same concepts, but The Five Dysfunctions is written as a parable, and The Advantage is written like a academic document. It's kind of weird, but they're the same guiding principles about how you earn and build trust by being vulnerable, right? As opposed to like being buttoned down or making excuses. Or it's this idea that when you are transparent and when you lead from that standpoint and you ask for that in others, that you're able to build tighter bonds. And with those tighter bonds, you can do greater things. It's a really fascinating read.
I love the comment you just made, because it brought me back to literally 18. One of my very first bosses that I really like saw as a mentor told me, I didn't really know what he meant at the time, but he said, you got to earn the right to win. And it has stuck with me, you know, I don't want to say how many years later now, but when I was 18, being told you got to earn the right to win, and it really, you know, impacted me then and impacts me now. And you just kind of touched on that. And I feel like those are the things that, you know, can really, you know, put you on the right path.
Yeah, 100%. If somebody wants to reach out to learn more about you, Mosquito Shield, to see if that's a system that makes sense for them, what's the best way for somebody to take a next step with the Mosquito Shield brand?
So, So MoShield.com, MoShield.com is the website. MoShieldFranchise.com is if it's, you're specifically looking to learn more about the franchising opportunity. And then I honestly just love to share my email, Ryan, because I feel like, again, if somebody wants just to chat, if they want to talk about, if they're a franchisor and they're in that, you know, sort of emerging space and they're just getting going, I love to talk to emerging franchisors, because I've been there and went through those tough times early on. Love to give some advice on that. And then again, if somebody's just looking at any business opportunity and they want to chat about that outside of Mosquito Control, and that's michael@moshield.com. So that's a great way to reach me. And of course, our LinkedIn page, or my LinkedIn page, has a ton of information as well.
Dude, thank you. You gave so much information in like so little time. And I think a lot of the things you said made a lot of sense, and hopefully it's helpful for a lot of people listening. Michael, congrats on your success. I know you're crazy busy, so I'll let you get back to it, but great meeting you. Thank you for taking by to like drop some great bombs with us, and yeah, keep at it, man. Great work.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad we could finally put this together. So appreciate it, Ryan.
Yeah, you bet, man.
Yeah.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.